This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Well, there are truths that we like to keep to ourselves. If your four-year-old asks you about Santa Claus, you might say, yeah, Santa Claus comes down on magical reindeer and delivers presents under the tree. And if your wife says to you, does this dress make me look fat? Everyone knows the answer is not to say yes. There are some truths, though, that need to be screamed out by, like, the kid in The Emperor Has New Clothes. Something everyone is seeing, but nobody wants to yell out. Until the kid says, yeah, the emperor's naked. And I think Monday Night Football was one of those moments where we need to say the New York Giants really, really, really stink. The fun story that they were last year and the emergence of Daniel Jones as a quarterback who did some really good things and won a playoff game, enough to earn a $40 million contract. And then feeling of, hey, we're going to make Saquon Barkley and we're going to take him in this offseason and then we're going to give him a deal. So play on this adjusted franchise tag for this upcoming season. Well, and Brian Daboll, by the way, your coach of the year in your first season. Well, the Giants are a mess. No Saquon Barkley, dealing with a high ankle sprain. The offensive line is terrible. Daniel Jones is being rushed, and the Giants are miserable. This is not to take away anything from the Seahawks, because the Seahawks last night at 3-1 took advantage of a very, very bad football team. But it's amazing how you can have a year where you go 9-7-1 and become the surprise of the NFL. To a season where everything is starting to not only fall apart, but now you're being exposed as one of the worst teams in the league. Daniel Jones got sacked 10 times last night. 10 times. You can watch NFL games from here until eternity and not see that. And yet, Daniel Jones was so bad that now, as people look at the mirror of the two quarterbacks in that city, one is starting to get a little bit more credit in Zach Wilson, and the other one, who got all the credit last year for playing well enough to, again, get the Giants to the playoffs and win a playoff game, is now being perceived as this quarterback is done if he does not get any help, and he has no help. Look, everyone said this during the offseason. The Giants made a mistake. They franchise-tagged the wrong person, that it should have been Daniel Jones, and they should have given a deal to Saquon Barkley. Not a big, maybe Nick Chubb deal, but something that would have said, look, we're going to solidify you. Now, obviously, it wouldn't have changed anything because the high ankle sprain has nothing to do with his contract. It has everything to do with being hit on the field. But the reality of it is that the Giants need Saquon Barkley more than they need Daniel Jones. But more importantly, they need an upgrade on the offensive line because they're not a threat to run the football. Daniel Jones is out there trying to scramble, and he can't scramble. And the third thing is that he makes quick decisions even if the pressure isn't coming. That's the problem of being sort of a scared quarterback, is that even when you're getting time, even when you're getting an ability to sort of read things, he's not reading things because he feels the pressure is coming all the time. That's what happens when you get sacked 10 times. And you don't even have to get sacked 10 times. After your fourth or fifth sack, you can start analyzing where you're at and start going, I'm rushing on every single possession. And that's where they're at right now. I said last week when they lost to San Francisco that one of the biggest concerns for the Giants is their quarterback isn't a quarterback that steps up to bad occasions. And that's what you need a quarterback to do. It's easy when things are running smooth. That's where, by the way, a lot of the people are still not sold on Brock Purdy yet, because the system works, the players around him work, everything is plug and play. I don't necessarily think that criticism is unfair, but I don't think it needs to be exaggerated that maybe we need to figure Brock Purdy out. The answer is somewhere probably in the middle, because the way we judge quarterbacks isn't when everything is working perfectly. It's how do they play when things aren't working perfectly? How do they overcome an injury to a running back or an injury to a wide receiver, or an offensive line that's not very good, or a circumstance where the defense can't stay on the field for 10 seconds, and now the game is like 37-25, and you have to start coming back in that game? Those are the kind of things we look at quarterbacks to and say, how do you respond with real adversity? Not systems, but how do you, when the chips are down, how do you carry the team on your back? And we've seen the greats do it time and time again. right? Even when you're a stacked and loaded football team with talent all around you, we still saw Tom Brady do that occasionally. We still saw Peyton Manning do it occasionally, and John Elway do it occasionally, Dan Marino do it occasionally, right? Joe Montana, even when they had the best teams in the league. There were games when they were needed the most, when they were needed to get over whatever hump that particular game was leading them into. And Daniel Jones is not that quarterback. Last night, the game was 14-3, and Daniel Jones throws a pick six at the goal line that's returned 97 yards for a touchdown. That's as devastating of an interception as you can throw. You could make it 14-10 in the third quarter. Why? Because he read his first receiver all the way. Why? Because the offensive line was making it so that he was getting put on his back constantly. And if he wasn't getting sacked, he was getting hit. That's why. It is an absolute fundamental failure of everything along the line from the offense for the Giants. And again, more attention should be played on the Seahawks because Geno Smith played. He had to leave. Drew Locke came in. He played well. Smith came back in. Witherspoon's a rookie. He was fantastic. There is a lot of things to like about Seattle, but I know the more attention is going to be paid on the Giants. By the way, the Seahawks now 6-0 at MetLife Stadium. And oh, by the way, Who keeps calling this a revenge game? Why was it a revenge game? Because it was New York? Did the Giants send Geno Smith into the netherworld of the NFL where he landed in Seattle? I mean, Jet fans and Giant fans aren't exactly on the same, wavelength. Like they're not one in the same. They're two different fans. But nevertheless, let the narrative be the narrative. But I think Brian Daboll is now starting to realize, oh my God, I've got a lot of problems. Joe Shane should probably do the same thing. There's a lot of problems. And by the way, kudos to the Seahawks. It's a larger thing about the Seahawks. Kudos to them. Because when Russell Wilson was giving them becoming a real pain in the behind, and they realized, maybe the future would be better without him, and they took the Denver Broncos to town on everything that they wanted to get out of this, what did they get? Last night, they got good play from Drew Locke, Noah Fant with a big catch that was almost a touchdown, and they drafted Witherspoon in a deal that they got from the Denver Broncos for Russell Wilson. So last night, some of the key players in that win had everything to do with how they got to the Seattle Seahawks in the first place. So again, great job by the Seattle. Get everything you can. If you're going to ship a Pro Bowl quarterback somewhere else, get everything you can to make your team better. But to me, I think if I was a Giants fan, this would be so frustrating. Because when you feel like you make the playoffs, when you feel like, okay, you know what? Maybe, just maybe, the quarterback is turning into what we thought he was going to be when they drafted him in 2019. That maybe, just maybe, this is now starting to turn the corner. We feel like we've gotten the right coach. We feel like we got the right general manager, right? We have taken the old regime and gotten rid of it. Now we put in a new regime and we got positive results out of it. 9 wins last year, a playoff berth, a road playoff victory, sign our quarterback. It's hard to feel like you have a quarterback in this league, as we say over and over again. Last year, the Giants felt like, yeah, you know what? Maybe we do have the quarterback. And today, they not only sit at 1-3, but get this. You have to really look at that 1-3. They are a miracle comeback at Arizona away from being 0-4. I mean, that was huge. They scored 31 points in the second half. Arizona or not, Arizona is turning out to be a little better than we thought. They kind of have some fight and grit. And that is the only half of football that the Giants have played well in 4 games. 8 halves and only one half of football is when they played well. They are miserable. Miserable. Last night I was feeling sorry for Daniel Jones. And normally I don't. But that offensive line was like, go right ahead. We don't like him for whatever reason. I mean, seriously. 10 sacks. Again, you can watch NFL for a long time and not see 10 sacks. And he's just out there taking hit after hit after hit after hit. He finishes with 203 yards passing, two interceptions. The Giants did have 112 yards on the ground, and 66 yards were from Jones alone. That's nuts. That's nuts. It's over half coming from your quarterback. Nat Breida's not a threat to run. Gary Brightwell's not a threat to run. And so when you don't have a threat to run, you can't trick the defense up. They're going to come after you strong. They know you're going to throw. And, oh, by the way, when a rookie says, well, one of the things we know about Daniel Jones is that he reads his first, he stares at his first read all the way through. It was easy picking at the goal line to return in 97 yards. And boy, what a pick six that was. That kid's got some wheels. But nevertheless, Monday Night Football, not a good game. Just not a fun game. I wasn't expecting it, to be honest with you. I mean, it wasn't like kind of on the radar.
But man, it was, you know, the only issue I had with it was that it the score is a lot closer than the game really was, which is bizarre to say.
Well, it was right? A 21-point win.
Well, I know. It was a 21-point win, but yeah. I mean, it shouldn't. I mean, it was 14-3 forever before that pick six.
Yeah, and it could have extended.
It was like, this should be like 35-3 right now, the way the Giants are playing.
Right.
So, I mean, they're a terrible team.
They are. They're terrible. Boy, that offensive line should be ashamed of themselves.
Yeah.
If I was any of those guys on the offensive line, I'd give up 10 sacks. Even if I didn't give up 10 sacks as a unit, I would be humiliated.
It's one of those moments.
That is just a stat you do not see.
It's one of those moments where you wish you had five guys who's like, you guys are all fired. Get out.
That's right. I know. Exactly. All right. It's Wake Up Call. We'll continue. More on the NFL week number 4. We'll look ahead a little bit to week number 5 during your Tuesday.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sportsnap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, we'll have top 5, bottom 5 later on in the show as we continue along on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. All right, so week 4 in the NFL is now in the books. Boy, I felt like I needed a shower after that game last night. It was terrible.
Yeah.
So terrible.
Yeah.
Ugh.
But you know, the problem was, too, is I wanted to turn it off so many times.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm just, you know, I don't know. I guess you want to see the train wreck happen. I was telling you before the show, I help out my son with his fantasy football team, and he had Darren Waller. And he needed like 5 points to take the win or 6 points to take the win. I don't know, something like that. And it was kind of fun watching the game that way and just noticing how often Waller was open and Daniel Jones never looking in his direction.
Yeah, exactly. And By the way, fantasy football and betting have changed the way most NFL games. I hate to say this because we love the league so much. Most NFL games are not most of them, but a lot of them are like unwatchable just from a competitive standpoint. A lot of them get out of hand. But if you have fantasy involvement or betting involvement, you stay to the end. You'll stay all the way to the end, even if it's 24-3 or if it's 31-10 or if it's 70-20. Right? Like, if you've got a bunch of Dolphin players, you're hanging with it all the way through to the very end. Right? So, yeah, no question. I mean, those two aspects have changed the way we look at, you know, the way we can consume the product, no doubt. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, he could not read second, third options.
No.
Because it was just, he had no time.
Like,
right? He had no time.
You know, you said, I mean, that interception, that 97-yard interception, he was just staring at the guy the entire time.
Telegraphed it the entire way.
And then if you watch the video, you'll see in the background Darren Waller completely open.
Yeah.
Like, all you got to do is just, you know, do one of those soft tosses into the corner. He's tall. Let him jump for it. You know, it's probably an easy six.
You know, it really is incredible. I mean, I was kind of alluding to this earlier, that in New York, you now have a narrative change with Zach Wilson. You see how much heat Rodney Harrison is getting?
Oh, my God.
And you're trying to get Chris Jones to talk. And well-deserved.
Yeah, it was a terrible question.
Well-deserved. It was a terrible question. And Chris Jones wasn't taking the bait on it one second on trying to get Rodney Harrison wanted so bad for Chris Jones of the Kansas City Chiefs to agree with him that Zach Wilson was garbage. And Jones was really quick to defend Zach Wilson, saying, look, that guy's getting better every day. He's special. Like, no joke. Like, listen, I have to watch the film of him as a defender of the team he's playing, and I'm not agreeing with this. And Rodney Harrison is now getting ripped to shreds by people who are like, how dare you? Like, did you watch the game? He threw for 245 with two touchdowns, and some of his throws were brilliant. And people really believe, had that interception stood and the Jets had the ball, he would have given them a real fighting chance to go down and tie the game or win it.
And what the other part of it, too, is just the, I mean, like you're saying, like the amount of people coming forward now, even after the fact.
And the flip side now is there's another quarterback in New York who's going to get run out of town if he's not careful, because even though it's not entirely his fault, he is a quarterback that's going to have to figure it out as the game. At what point, how many sacks do you have to take before you realize you're going on your butt the whole night? Before you have to go, all right, we need to figure something else out. Because I have about a third of a second before I release this ball.
Yeah.
So what are we going to do? Like, I'm looking at stand up for yourself. Dable's throwing tablets? Well, first of all, can I just make this clear? I get emotions are emotions. And sometimes you can't control them. But what did you think your quarterback was going to do coming off a 97-yard interception return for a touchdown? Want to hear you yell at him? He's probably yelling at himself. Like some of the great quarterbacks, and Daniel Jones is not in that category, don't mislead me, but some of the greats wouldn't take that nonsense for 2 seconds. And most quarterbacks go into their little sort of mental shell where they're like, listen, what do you want? What do you think? I don't know that. Yeah, I made a mistake. I get it. I made a mistake. You can yell at me on TV the whole time. I'm going to sit here. Yeah, Brian Dable's throwing tablets. Well connected. But you know what? At the same time, you kind of understand where they're going. He knows the metrics of the game. Like, his team's not playing great, and yet they had a chance to make it a 4-point game. And instead, it's a 14-point swing in the other direction. It's very frustrating. It's got to be for Brian Dable. It's got to be like, ugh. God, we were just off an emotional high of last season. Ugh. And he's like, and here's all the coaches are saying the same thing. It's a long year, and we get it. You know, something could switch and change. I get it. But they need Saquon Barkley back. They need the threat of a run. They need the threat of him out of the backfield. Whether you throw him a short pass or you hand the ball off, play action, all of that. They need Saquon Barkley back to be competitive in games like this. I mean, Seattle is a good team, but metric wise, if you have Saquon Barkley, they're not a 21-point win over the Giants good, right? I mean, if Barkley's in the game, that game might be closer.
He adds a different dynamic. All of a sudden, you have a running game. Like you said before, Breda, I don't even know who the other guys were that just kept throwing running backs out there. They couldn't do anything.
Nothing.
Yeah, and the only reason why Daniel Jones had more than half of the rushing yards is because every time the pocket collapsed, he looked downfield and was like, well, I can go get 10 yards.
Yeah, sure.
And I'll go run.
Sure.
And risk getting hammered because, I mean, you know, the kid didn't really know how to slide and save himself. He kept going for it, and guys were like, you know, Seahawks were just wanting to feast on him.
That's right. Isaiah Simmons got in a little bit of trouble. He tackled Geno Smith going out of bounds, and Geno had to go off the field. He later came back in the game. Smith told the media afterwards that it was a dirty play. Listen, I've seen the video a couple of times. Do I think it's a dirty play? Look, I know defenders want to get a hit on the quarterback as legal as they possibly can. Every player wants to go get one little legal lick at a quarterback that's running out of bounds. That's why what you saw, like Justin Herbert, you know, in the game, it becomes bad timing when you miss it and they go out of bounds and you're like, whoops.
You got to wait for those Kirk Cousins moments.
Right.
When Kirk Cousins is running down the field trying to tackle the guy who intercepted it.
And then he gets walloped. That's what you got to wait for. Yeah, that's when you can take the real lick at the quarterback. But I don't think this was dirty in a way that people, like, I don't think it was intentional. I think it just gets rolled in a weird way. I get it.
The Raiders one was.
The Raiders one was, yeah.
Yeah, I've refused to even try to remember that guy's name or look it up.
No, he got immediately ejected, which is the right call. This one was, he was actually grabbing him, and then he kind of rolled on his ankle, and maybe he could have prevented that. I guess that's what Smith was trying to say.
The problem is, you know, I look at it like it's momentum. And it's like, you know, it feels at times people just want your momentum to stop right then and there. Like Was it the Seahawks guy that roughing the passer, or the Giants guy that roughing the punter kick?
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah. And I looked at that guy. Just before halftime, wasn't it?
Yeah, and that guy knew immediately that he was getting flagged for it. And you just look at it, it's like, you know, yeah, it's a mistake on him. And it's a special teams mistake. But his momentum carried him through. He was, like, trying to get in there as quickly as he could to block that punt. And then he knew, like, immediately when he touched him, he knew. He was like, I just got a flag.
And I felt bad
for the guy.
Yeah, I did too. Yeah, but still. So nevertheless, I think there was more like, well, it was the way he kind of got grabbed. Geno Smith got grabbed, a little horse collar there, but then kind of went down on the legs. I get it. But, I mean, it's these things are going to happen. We're trying to get it out of the game, but this stuff is going to happen. That's just the way it is. I mean, it's.
Now, did you check out the Manning cast at all?
I did. I saw a little bit of the Manning cast.
I flipped it over right before the interception.
Yeah. Oh, really? So you got some television gold.
It wasn't really gold. It was just Peyton said, "Oh no," and Eli said nothing.
Yeah.
And both of them had a look of disgust on their face. Like, yeah, it was almost as if they were trying to find a way to, vindicate Daniel Jones.
Yeah, really.
You know, and just couldn't find a way. And I mean, it got to a point where Eli just said, he's like, you know, he's rushing the throw. He didn't need to throw it there. He rushed it.
I didn't see it live, but I saw it afterwards, the bit where they were calling plays.
Yes.
Like we call play to each other. And then how you can, as a coordinator, you can mess that up by continuing to send messages to the quarterback, and the quarterback just wants you to be quiet. Yeah, I did like that.
Then that's the beauty of that show.
Right.
Honestly, that is the best part about it, is that you're watching two former quarterbacks who played at the highest level. I mean, you know, both are Super Bowl champions. Probably both are going to be in the Hall of Fame. Well, one already is. We'll have to wait and see about the other. And just getting their insight during a game is perfect.
I'm telling you right now, I know people might think this is crazy, but if I'm Joe Buck and Troy Aikman, I don't like this at all.
No, not at all.
I don't like this at all. I don't like being attached.
That was the only reason why I went back.
The game I do is the game they do. Like, I would hate that. If I was Joe Buck, I'd hate that. He's the premier number one play-by-play guy in the country. And people are more excited about what two brothers, quarterback brothers, are going to say and do in comedic sketches in a game rather than the traditional broadcast. And no matter what audience percentage they're losing, that's still significant audience percentage that they're losing.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Now, by the way, our good friend Levin Reed's going to join us from WBZ in Boston to talk Patriots and Celtics because, one, the Celtics acquired Drew Holiday. But the other two is Bill Belichick in trouble? Is Mac Jones getting benched? What's going on in New England?
Is it Zappy Hour once again?
Is it Zappy Hour once again for the Patriots? Yikes. That team is averaging 13 points a game. Terrible. Ugh.
Yeah, but you know what? I still say it's better than the Giants.
Well, okay.
I mean, the thing I love most, Troy Aikman said it yesterday.
You think that's a rallying cry?
No, it's not a rallying cry at all. Well, I guess maybe it might be because they are 0-2 against them in the Super Bowls.
That'll be comforting. Yeah, that's comforting.
Troy Aikman pointed this out, that the Giants have been outscored 64-3 at home.
Yeah, they're terrible.
That's, you know, that's, you have to protect. You haven't scored a touchdown in your own house yet.
Yeah, I know. It's awful. They're not. Yeah, exactly. I mean, because they lost 40-0 in the opener.
And I love what you said too. I love the narrative that's switched in New York. Brilliant thing that, you know, we were all ready. I mean, pitchforks and torches were at the Meadowlands for Zach Wilson, and then all of a sudden, I mean, he's the most protected quarterback in the league right now.
What I will tell you, I really think that Aaron Rodgers had a ton to do with that. I think Aaron Rodgers' willingness to say, hey, Joe Namath, we don't need this. We don't need that. We know you're a legend. We know you're Mr. Jed, but we don't need it here. We don't need this right now.
I mean, is that his, was this Aaron Rodgers' relaxed speak and just speech and just like, you know, hey, just be patient.
No, I think it was just, him making a point to, you know, listen, what, look, Joe Namath can say whatever he wants. We said that at the time that he said he can say whatever he wants, but it does have lingering effects. You have to know where your shot, you fire your shot, but you have to know where it's going to land. And I don't think Joe Namath at his age realized where that was going to land. He's the Jets got Trevor Siemian. That was the big move. And they put him on the practice squad, right, to make, and then put him up to a point where he could be a quarterback for them if they want. But the reality was, and we said it from the very beginning, they weren't going to go out and get anybody. They can't afford it. They would have to really get, they'd have to get really creative. But it was going to be very difficult. So if you're Aaron Rodgers, and you know, because you reworked your contract so that you could get players and secure players on that team, and you know how tough it's going to be for that team to make a decision on a player so they could free up some money, so they could go out and get maybe somebody that's going to cost them $4 or $5 million, $6 million, and the number one icon of the franchise is going on local radio saying that the best thing for the quarterback is to leave town. You should say, listen, no. I'm sorry, I know you're a legend, and I'm not challenging the legendary aspect of your status here, but you can't do that to us. You can't make those kind of statements and think it's not going to somehow trickle down to us in the confidence we have with this kid. We've got to lift him up. This is the only chance we have, right? And, you know, players do not go, hey, it's week four, I guess I'll just take the next 12 weeks off and lose games on purpose. That's not how this league works. So if you're Aaron Rodgers, you did the right thing. You went out there publicly and you said to Joe Namath, cut it out. So if you're Zach Wilson, you got players coming to you and say, look, can you imagine if you were a defensive lineman? You're not even on the offensive side of the ball. So you have nothing to do with the meetings or anything like that, but you know Zach Wilson is your teammate. And you, let's say, guy, you've been in the league a while. You know this league. You know how tough it is in this league. And you go, that kid is getting absolutely barbecued everywhere he goes. And again, don't cry me a river. I understand. I get it. This is not just a first world problem for quarterbacks. And it's even higher than that. But the reality is that he's a young guy at 23, 24 years old. Well, 24, 25. And he's, everywhere he goes, the city hates him, right? All the Jet fans don't like him. They're booing him. He's terrible. He's terrible. He's terrible. Joe Namath is telling him, terrible, terrible, terrible. And he goes, that kid can't go anywhere. That kid can't wake up in the morning without the entire city against him. We've got to do something. We've got to rally something. And so what happened on Sunday night for the Jets was the defense played extraordinarily well. They did really well. I mean, that was 17-0, and then they shut Kansas City down enough for that offense to start kicking in gear. And then Sauce Gardner did what he was supposed to do, which is intercept a pass, and then there was a penalty, and then that was it. But the reality was, is that when Rodney Harrison says what he thinks America agrees with him, that I think Rodney Harrison thought, everybody is seeing what I saw. Everyone's talking about how bad he is. I will say how bad he is.
Yeah. It was almost as if he didn't watch the game.
Right, exactly.
I understand he prefaced the question with, hey, Chris, went before tonight. And you're watching film, did you think he was garbage? And, you know, Chris just wouldn't take the bait. And I get that he was saying that. We all said that. It's like, you know, guy, Zach Wilson cannot play quarterback. But then he proved it. He proved that he can hang. He had one of the great quarters he could possibly have. Had an incredible drive. And then, you know, it's like he outplayed Mahomes the entire game.
And again, that kudos to Chris Jones, because that, he could have just laughed it off, or he could have just, you know, said, hey, you know.
Yeah.
But he was absolutely going to the defense of the opposing quarterback.
Right.
You know, to say, hey, enough. And you know what? I wonder how much of what people, you know, look, they all care about their teams, and they're more focused on their teams than other things around the league. But I wonder how much of what Zach Wilson was going through in New York trickled down to a lot of people around the league going, hey, you know what, man? He is just getting ripped to shreds. And it's not, you know, he's just absolutely getting torn to pieces. And there must have been some level of sympathy for him going, hey, you know what? It's a tough business. It's a tough league. And now, who's going to rescue Daniel Jones from the wrath of the New York media who are coming after him, even if your offensive line is Swiss cheese. What's bigger than Swiss cheese? What has bigger holes than Swiss cheese? I don't know. But that was the offensive line. It was terrible. And Daniel Jones reacted to almost every play as if he was getting totally pressured. So my wife and I went to dinner last night. We're now doing this thing where we're acting like senior citizens. We're going early to dinner. So it's literally like she just had a birthday and people have been giving her like gift cards to restaurants and like, all right, we'll start using them. So last night she goes, you want to go to this restaurant? I go, yeah, no problem. She goes, I want to go right after work at 5 o'clock. I go, okay. I said, what am I, 60, 65 years old? Am I in for the early bird? So we start going early. So we go to these restaurants. And then my wife said, I know you want to get home for the game. And I'm like, yeah, I know, but it's, you know, it's Giants Seahawks. It wasn't really thrilling. But she said, do you want to run to the store? Because it's Halloween and she's decorating for Halloween. And she goes, you want to go to the Lowe's and Home Depot have like those big Halloween displays. She goes, you want to go see if there's some stuff for Halloween? I go, yeah. So we walked into Home Depot. Well, as soon as we walked in, it's all Christmas stuff.
Yep. I said the same thing to my wife yesterday.
It's all Christmas stuff. It's already trees and talking Santas and blow up things.
Oh,
and, you know,
I'm so glad you said this.
Everywhere we looked, there was one little section of like leftover Halloween stuff.
I too went to Lowe's yesterday. I had to pick up some. I had to pick up something there, and it was just really quick in. But I was on the phone with my wife at the same time because I wanted to make sure to get the right thing. Because you know, I didn't take. Usually, what I do is I leave it in my garage, and I take a photo of it. And I didn't take a photo. I was like, "Can you read? You know, read what this thing is." And the first words out of my mouth was like, first of all, I said, you know, the Christmas stuff, there's a row of trees all lit up and two Santas. And I look over and it's right next to the Halloween stuff, which is getting smaller by the day.
It's crazy. Why can't I enjoy the spooky season?
Well, I mean, it's October 2nd.
Exactly.
I mean, I haven't even watched one Halloween thing yet.
No, I haven't either. And the other thing too is, like, I like this time of year. I like the spooky stuff. I like the pumpkins. I like the stuff. I like all that stuff. And I'm walking in, and it's Christmas already. Why don't you just put that stuff out in May?
No,
right?
Why don't you just take it down at all?
Important to the bottom line. Why take it down at all? Just leave it up constantly. I mean, my goodness, we can't even breathe for 2 seconds without Christmas carols. Like, and everybody's pushing all the buttons, so the whole thing was all. Like, I walked into Santa's village in October. I'm like, listen, look, I just want to enjoy October. We're now in that baseball playoff start today. The NFL season is now starting to get a little tight. College football is starting to get into conference play. I don't need holiday spirit right now. I don't need the trees and the Santas and the talking reindeer and everything else that people want to sell me for the holidays. That was crazy. And then we went to Lowe's. It was kind of the same thing. It's the exact same thing. Like, they still have all this trees.
It's just, it's too quick.
It's too quick. All right, Levin Reed's going to join us. We'll talk Patriots. Get his thoughts on the Celtics who acquired Drew Holiday and what that means. But more importantly, I just want to get his thoughts on Belichick, where he stands with the fan base. What's the situation with Mac Jones? What's the situation with Bailey Zappi? And how much of this might be coming to an end soon? That's our good friend Levin Reed, WBZ in Boston, coming up next.
This is Brett Musburger, and you are listening live to Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio with my main man, Tony D.
All right, let's go to the Progressive Guest Line. Progressive Insurance, round out your protection with life, phone, and pet health insurance. Levin Reed joins us, WBZ in Boston. Patriots and Celtics, we had to get our man on from Beantown. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing fine. Hey, in your market, did they turn away from the Patriots game because we were prisoners here? We had to watch the Patriots game as they were getting blown out and Mac Jones was playing like if I was out there.
Yeah, I know. I've been there. I've been there with the teams that I've been in certain markets with. Yeah, no, I ended up seeing a lot of that game on Sunday.
Oh, man, I'm sorry about that. I'm so sorry.
What is the where does Belichick, he's never really had this issue, but where is Belichick with the quarterbacks? Is he a guy that will say, I'll make a decision? Has he already made Mac Jones QB1 for the game against the Saints? Where is he with this?
Mac Jones is Mac Jones is QB1. I mean, you have to remember, Bailey Zappe, they put him on waivers at the end of training camp.
Yeah.
They don't like Bailey Zappe. They went in and tried to figure out what they're going to do something with Matt Corral. That didn't work out. Now they have, they have like three back there to try to figure out what they're going to do. But right now, the QB1 is Mac Jones. And, this was the first game, I mean this, out of the four games that we were all like, we thought people would just pile it on Mac Jones. This time it was like, Mac, you were terrible. You were absolutely awful, and they've got to figure it out.
Yeah, how much of this is Mac Jones like, look, since I've gotten in this league, I've had a different offensive coordinator?
You could say that, but the game plan for the first three games was good. This time, this was on him. And there was steadily improvement. I will say this, too, and I'll give them this. If we were to look at the calendar of games that they had, the Pats were going to be 1-3. We thought they were going to beat the Jets. They were going to lose to Philly. They were going to lose to Dallas. And they were going to lose to Miami. I think we all figured that was going to happen. And then they'll beat the Jets. Now, this is the game that everybody circled as a win against the Saints. They lose this game, they'll be panicking the city.
Where is the thought process with fans on Belichick? I know this is a wild question, but it is a what have you done for me lately league.
I think it's even more with Mr. Kraft, where what have you done for me lately league. I feel like Mr. Kraft and Jerry Jones are on the back nine, and they want to get there one more time, and they're ready to shell out as much money as possible. But are you going to make the right decisions to make our team a better team? I think the fans feel that way, too. And I will say this, it didn't help that Brady left and won a championship. Brady leaves and wins a championship, and you still struggle. And all of a sudden, whether you thought it was 50-50 Brady-Belichick, now all of a sudden you're like, well, maybe it was 80-20. Maybe you just, you tried to screw Tom, and he was just doing as much as he can as the great deodorant to cover up all the smell. So I think fans, they want to win. They want to feel like they're being competitive. And right now the Pats are not. And then they lose Christian Gonzalez, who's their great rookie. They lose Matt Judon, who's maybe their best player. And now you go into another game where you don't really know who's going to be on defense and your offense is still sputtering.
With Belichick, he has that surly style, and it works when you're winning. How is the media reacting when it's not winning?
Ripping him apart.
I bet.
Because they're ripping him apart. You can't be surly, disinterested. I don't want to answer your questions when you're losing. You just can't be, because it does. You haven't built that. The equity now. The equity's all taken away from you. This is a new reign. And I will say this also: you can't coach like you have Tom Brady on the team. So if there's a chance for you to get a number one wide receiver, you should get it, because all the other guys are not going to be made better by a second tier quarterback. So go get that number one wide receiver to elevate everybody on your team. He did not do that.
Let's go back to Mac Jones for a second. People are saying this is the critical year for Mac Jones. Is it the critical year for Mac Jones? I mean, he's going to get closer to where you have to make a decision on him. But how much of it now is this season is going to be looking at what his future is with New England?
I would say it was critical. But the NFL just throws out money to quarterbacks. Am I wrong?
Yeah,
they gave Daniel Jones like $40 million.
Right.
Like, I don't know how critical it is. Like, do you start all over with Will Greer? What are you going to do? So I think it's critical in the fans' perspective, and it's critical maybe because if you feel he's your guy, maybe you'll go get him a number one wide receiver like they did with, like they did with Joe Burrow when they knew he was the guy, or they figured they would do with Josh Allen when they knew he was the guy. But if you don't think he's the guy, that doesn't mean you're not going to give him $25 million and then figure it out after that. I mean, nobody wants to start again with a you just talked about quarterbacks having to learn new systems. Do we want to start again?
Right.
With a quarterback having to learn a new system? No. So if Bill O'Brien is going to be offensive coordinator, maybe you say, okay, if you can pick it up towards the end of this year, and then next year we'll see more promise. But right now, I don't know. I honestly couldn't tell you because I don't – like are you going to tank it for Caleb Williams, and then Caleb's going to be like, you know what, I'm going to stay at USC and make $5 million in NIL deal. Okay, then I'm screwed. I'm in a bad spot again. So I don't know how you handle what's going to happen with Mac Jones, other than coach him up as much as you can, and when everything is done, you make your decision.
Levin Reed joins us, WBZ in Boston on Sports Map Radio. I want to switch over to the Celtics, the Jrue Holiday acquisition. I see this. It's huge. It feels huge. Like to me, it's like a master. It's a chess move, but you really didn't know what your opponent was really going to do because they got rid of Marcus Smart, who's a great defender. Right. And then they replace him with Jrue Holiday, who's a better player, but they didn't know Jrue Holiday would be available when they got rid of Marcus Smart in the first place.
They dove into what the coach wants to do, which is to bring more offense with little less defense. So you figure, okay, we're going to replace Robert Williams III with Porzingis. Porzingis can, you know, can defend the rim, but he's a better scorer. We're going to replace Marcus Smart with Jrue Holiday. Okay, Jrue Holiday is a great defender, not as good as Marcus Smart, much better scorer, and at the end of games, he's a better ball handler and a better decision maker. So now you lucked out. And I will say this, if you're watching around the NBA, whatever's going to happen next year with the money, they don't care. Yeah. Everybody's spending money right now. They're like, okay, whatever that arbitration deal is going to come down or the collective bargaining agreement, we got to get ahead of that right now and spend as much as we can because that's exactly what Brad Stevens is doing. And it's funny. Because we've been in the area of Danny Ainge forever where he was, you know, hoarding draft picks as if he was like a chipmunk. Where Brad Stevens is like, no, I'll take that. I don't know who's going to be coming out in 2019 or 2029. I have no idea. I just want to win right now. And the window is so small, especially when you have guys like Brown and Tatum. They're just trying to do it now. So I think people around here love the refreshing attitude where let's just go for it. Why not? Go for it. You know, whatever. How much money does it take? Yeah, well, go for it. Because next year we're not going to be able to do that. I think that's what's happening.
They get rid of two guys. They get rid of Robert Williams, who I like but doesn't play a lot, and Malcolm Brogdon didn't want to be there anyway.
And it's funny. Malcolm Brogdon is the sixth man of the year, and he didn't want to be here. You know, he cut his teeth on it, but he's always injured. And Robert Williams, they loved. Remember, when Marcus Smart won the Defensive Player of the Year, many people thought it should have been Robert Williams.
Sure. Yep.
But, again, he's got that balky knee. Not sure how he's going to do out there. And he's thin. And you're going up against guys like Joel Embiid, who are using Al Horford to slow down, not Robert Williams. You're going up against guys like, you know, Giannis, who are using Al Horford to slow down. Now, those guys are not going to be slowed down at all. And I will say this about the Celtics. After maybe seven players, you're stuck. But I feel that's with a lot of players in the league. But this is exactly what they needed. And I feel guys are going to start to buy in a lot quicker to what's going on, specifically because next year nobody makes money.
Man, I'm telling you, you bring it every time you come on the show, my man. Thank you so much. I know you're early and you got work to do, but you're the man when you come on.
Anytime you want me, just give me a holler.
Levin Reed, you're the best. WBZ on both the Patriots and their situation, and it's squirrely, definitely, and a little bit on the Jrue Holiday situation as he is acquired over the weekend by the Celtics in sort of the counter move that as Milwaukee gets Damian Lillard, we said this at the time. Remember, Portland was like, well, we're not keeping Jrue Holiday. No, that's not part of the plan. The plan is we're gonna start acquiring draft picks, so maybe some expiring contracts. The goal is to start rebuilding here in Portland. We're not taking Holiday, so who wants Holiday? And all of a sudden it was, well, is Miami going to be involved in this? Is Philadelphia going to be involved in this? And the answer was it was going to be Boston. There was talk that he could have been moved to a Western Conference team, but I never bought it. I thought that the Eastern Conference teams, seeing what Milwaukee was doing, were going to have to figure out a way to get Jrue Holiday and make a deal with Portland. And for the Celtics, it worked out great, again, because you get a defender. They lost a defender in Marcus Smart. You get a defender, but you get a defender that can score. He averages about 19 to 20 points a game. But you still get some strong defense out of him. You give up two players that, again, one player they like, and as he said, love, in Robert Williams. But he doesn't play a lot because he's hurt and whatnot. And Malcolm Brogdon doesn't want to be in Boston anyway, so you get rid of two players, plus picks and all that, you know, the unprotected this and protected this and swap protected this. But nevertheless, it's irrelevant. The goal was who's leaving, who's coming in, forget the picks for a second, who's exiting, who's coming in, and the Celtics made out on that deal in a very competitive, at least competitive top part of the Eastern Conference. All right, hour two coming up as we continue on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. It is Wake Up Call.